Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Lawrence Drink, a.k.a. Sparky Lee, CEO and founder of LegacyPrograms.net. We talk about a whole slew of different things, such as, you know, social injustice, reentry. If you want to check us out on LegacyPrograms.net. We have a Cards for the Incarcerated program going. You know, if you want to write somebody, let them know that they're thought of, give them back their humanization. It's very important for the process as each day they're being broken down into desensitized people. And I show this after doing 2 years. But our goal is to sit there and bridge the gap between society and incarceration. You know, that there's not much different out here. I don't see the much different, but yet people in prison, there's a hierarchy that they're experiencing by crimes. And out here, we judge by who's done time, who hasn't, who works what job, who makes what money, and we do the hierarchy out here. So it's very similar as I'm noticing this. And so our job is to, you know, acknowledge those that are doing the time, because there's a lot of and not what crime was committed. We don't box anybody in into a penal code. Because when we do that, we kind of take away their humanity. We take away their identity. But, you know, and we replace it with distancing and alienation. And I said, that is a problem that we need to attack. And we have to acknowledge that these are human beings. These are fathers, sons, nephews. These men and women that are doing time, they are just as human as any one of us out here. And after doing 20 years, I realized, like, all the stuff that was taken from me that was just God-given. And I'm not saying that the system took it from me. I took it from myself, first and foremost. But I do know that there's a lot of falsely imprisonment. There's a lot of falsely accused. I think 70 or 80 or even 90% are all plea deals. Not many people take it to trial. And the reason being is because they threaten you with so much time, and they scare you some in getting processed. You know, they only go in with a third grade education average. So, I mean, you're pretty much, you know, yeah, you see a 40-year-old, a 30-year-old, 20-year-old in that courtroom. But the problem with that is that, you know, mentally, they are not their age. And so we have to remember that, you know, sometimes what you see, you know, is not what you get. And it's not one size fits all. It's not a cookie cutter. So, you know, like I say, you know, when we focus on why the crime was committed, we get down to the racism and how to stop crime and one less victim, less crime theory. And that's super important. The, you know, locking them up, throwing away key is not the answer. Mass incarceration is a pandemic right now. But, you know how many people are dying in prison that are falsely accused? And there's just so much that goes with it. But yet, you know, everyone's quick to speak out against COVID and how COVID is being mishandled. What about mass incarceration? Let's look at that. Throwing an 18-year-old kid into a man's world, a survival world, and, you know, saying, hey, you need to do this, you need to act like this, you need to talk like this, and then one day, you know, hey, we're going to let you out, and then it's all back to normal. And then it's like, now we have to reprogram ourselves and try to figure out, okay, how do we dissect this and process that? And you know, as I said, you know, when I was in prison, before I got my life right, after I was peer mentor and youth diversion and stuff like that, I dealt a lot with these 18-year-old kids that already had 15 years in the system. And when I would talk to them, you know, I would have to reprogram them. I have to acknowledge that they were still different. And we would sit there and take them on as specifically, his name is Tyler. And this kid was so scared, but he would never admit it. And it took him on. And every morning I woke this kid up at 5, you know, a little bit after me. I woke up around 4:30, 3:30 every morning. And I'd make him coffee, and I'd show him how to roll up his mattress. Because, you know, back in the days, how prison used to be, right? How prison used to be was that we schooled. That, you know, I was schooled. We had, it was almost like military camp. You know, you were taught how to conduct yourself and what to do. But through the years in the prison system, it's gotten kind of loose where it's every man and woman for themselves. And so, you know, I had to wake this kid up and make him coffee and get his day started and show him some incentive to start a routine. Is that there's a lot that comes with reaching back and helping people and being there, that there's benefits and to be acknowledged with titles like that, it means a whole lot. And so, you know, and most importantly, this is the thing for all the family members that are doing the time with your loved ones. My heart goes out to you. You know, my wife was a prison for 8 years, and she knew the stuff that we went through in there. But I will tell you this, and just so there's, you know, everyone looks at a prison relationship and stuff like that. It goes, oh, they're just using you this night. Yeah, there are cases like that. But I'm going to tell you that it builds a foundation that when we do get out here and there's so much going on and so much struggle and challenge, that there's always that foundation to go back on. It's like a friendship, you know, just that if that can't break us, this can't break us. And, you know, we have to, you know, so I hope that for the ones that are doing time, don't think it's all in vain, that it's just all your, you know, it's being acknowledged you do the time with them. And know that, you know, there's a guilt that goes with that, where, you know, it's like taking prisoners almost as a prisoner. And so, you know, but the thing is that, you know, we know what heart we cause. We live with that every day, and that's one of the biggest struggles to get over, you know, is to sit there and, you know, but how do you get over something like that without acknowledging it and respecting it? And so, you know, that's just how I feel about that. And week, and I was so busy with work, and I apologize, and you know, but I do want to encourage everybody, you know, and I know I say this all the time, how it begins is never how it ends, but it's true. For everyone going through some straight bullshit, look at it like this. If we go back to the hardest time in our lives, whether it be child trauma, adult trauma, some event, look back and think about how they're similar to how you felt, your thought process, like what your beliefs are, and, oh, I'm never going to get over this. This is so difficult. This is backbreaking. Why have you forsaken me? Look at it like this. If that didn't break you, and today you're okay, and you're going through something similar, you're going to be fine. You know, it things happen. Not all, you know how they say, bad things happen to good people. Look, man, sometimes it's like the three types of business that I always find myself. I learned this from Grip, like power program. It's programmed for us by About Us. It's a really good program. I encourage anyone to check it out. It teaches emotional intelligence. And one of the things that, that helped me is that, you know, you have three types of business out here. You have your business, my business, and God's business. You know, my business is what I eat, what time I wake up, where I work, stuff like that. You know, how I interact with people. Your business is, you know, what you eat, what time you wake up. And it's like my program versus your program, which is They're both fine. They're just different. And then you have God's business. God's business is cancer, world pandemics, and stuff that we can't control. And to have that acknowledgement of and confirmation of, hey, it's not my business. I can't control this. And it's not like saying it's none of your business. By no means. What I mean is that there's things that you can't control. You know, you can't control somebody having cancer or dying of an illness or a flood or a fire. You can't control that. That's out of. So why do we invest in this? You know, and I had to always remind myself, why am I investing in something that I can't control? All this emotion, these emotions and these mental and physical things that I'm putting into this that I'm paying the price for, and at the end of the day, I have no control. So, you know, that's one of the things that I try to tell myself today, like, hey, you know, this is none of my business. I'm just going to sit here and live my best life and do the best I can, because that's all I can do, all I can control. It's like having somebody that yells in your face. You know, you can't control them yelling at you. Somebody acts, but you can control how you react. You have that choice. You know, and we always talk about one of the biggest things I've learned is from Criminal and Gang Members Anonymous. You know, step one, we are the source of the problem. If somebody I fired a job because somebody called me, shut the fuck up, punk. And I was the source of that problem, regardless of what he said. If I didn't sit there and tell the homeowner the truth that his house looked like crap and that the material that they were putting on there looked like plastic, I wouldn't have been in that situation where I got talked to like that. So at the end of the day, I'm responsible for myself. And when I decided to take my belt off and actually confront this guy for talking to me out my name, because I have this belief that you don't disrespect me. And so I was a source of that problem, and I get that. You know, being accountable, being responsible, having integrity is very important today. And, you know, sometimes if we just take that 1 minute to respond rather than react, when we respond, it's usually out of some emotional state, some warped belief that's being fueled by some childhood trauma or some events that now I'm putting into action. And so, but when I respond, it's with emotional intelligence. It's to sit there and analyze what's going on with this person. Like, okay, is he or she having a bad day? Am I just frustrated? Like, do I just want to victimize this person? Do I want to, you know, what is my step going to be? So when I tell y'all that, you know, sometimes we just have to take that step back and be like, it's just not worth it. It's not worth my fame. It's not worth my financial state. It's not worth my mind. Peace of my life here. So peace of mind is huge, you know, and it's just like self-care is vital. You know, my self-care is just sometimes doing nothing, just binge watching something or, you know, watching TV or just sleeping. You know, like after this, I'm going to go work on my car and a nap. And then I got work all over again. That's 12 hours. So, you know, it's one of those we have to prioritize. And you kind of have to protect everything you have, because there's people out there, everyone, that will try to take that from you. And we can't, you know, if you value your freedom, if you value your family, if you value your job and, you know, your peace, you're going to do everything you can to protect it. And sometimes to protect it, you just got to shut the hell up and just let it go. You know, it's not worth it. And, you know, that's why I say, well, his business, my business, and God's business. I feel a certain way, I just got to let him and not invest too much to it, because once I invest, I'm all in. You know, I already got warped beliefs. I already have a violent tendency in myself that I want to lash out a certain way. And normally that comes from past experiences. You know, past experiences, basing present conflicts with past experiences and future consequences. You know, just because I let somebody talk to me, I can't let somebody talk to me back then. Today, I'm not going to be victimized. That's a warped belief. So let's get that out the way. You know, it's not out here. You could sit there and get flipped off or cut off, and you don't have to pursue the person. You could just kick back and go about your day and leave it alone. That's the person having a bad day, or maybe he or she's in a hurry. So learning all this stuff, you know, it's only been out a year. After 20 years of being incarcerated, of being dehumanized, all rights being taken away, and being told what to do, when to do it, and the little freedoms that you do have, hold on to dear life, and you know, you try to keep them, or in there, out here, that want to take those things from us. You have to be mindful of, you know, how much power are we giving the next person to take our peace of mind, to take we have, we say we cherish. And I remember, and that brings me up to, like, you know, as a formerly incarcerated, I used to speak on this in these groups, and everyone sat there and said, oh, my family, my kids, you know, they're so important to me. They're vital. They're the moron I'll kill for them. You know, and you hear these big old these gang members and everybody else in there talking about, oh, I smashed this guy out with a brick. I did this violence, this and that. But they can never tell you how much they hurt their family. How you'll never hear a man sit there and broke their mother's heart or they let their kid down. And so that's, you know, once again, we go back to the respond versus reacting and acknowledging that, you know, there is no victimless crime. And that sometimes, you know, the ones we swear to protect are the ones we hurt the most. And it's usually due to some type of neglect, some type of acknowledgement, you know, minimization, justification. But that's what I like to do, is especially with my organization right now, the Legacy Programs, Education, Reentry, is I like to keep that bunk empty. I don't want them to have that bunk full. I want them to walk by there and be like, oh, there's another bunk empty. And I want to take that money out of the CDCR's mouth and out of DOC. Because I think that, you know, it's just, it's not right. And so, but I just want to sit there and tell the family members that you're not alone. You know, as much as you do, there's 1 in 6 families experience mass incarceration, regardless if it's your son, your dad, whatever. So, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, we're all doing the time with them, and that needs to be acknowledged. That needs to be shared with each other. And 1 in 6, like I said, 1 in 6 family members experience mass incarceration, whether it's a family member or a friend. And you know, what's weird is when it comes to military, 1 in 12. So if that's what gave me the idea was actually with Shayna. She gave me the idea of dealing more with the family members and as well as incarcerated. And so we offer services for everybody for free. If you need counseling, if you need something, we can figure it out. And we work hand in hand with so many other organizations that, you know, if I can find it, I know somebody that can. If I can't provide it, I know somebody that can. So, that's one of the things that, you know, I try to do. We're based off the donations. You know, we donate for the Dixie Fire, we donate for the reentry of our loved ones, and we give money to the family members that, you know, that are experiencing troubles. Or I think my biggest thing this last year was community service, just being part of the community, doing what I can to give back, you know, after so many years of taking and taking. And so that's just a little bit about what I do now, you know, besides work a 12-hour job. And I do what I can with what I have. And to keep that, you know, from people taking it from me, I got to protect it. And they keep calling me. So. But my Wi-Fi is shot. I don't know how it's going today. I don't know if this is choppy or, you know, but we're going to figure it out here, don't we? Ooh. So, you know, it's one of them things, people. It's just, and I'm noticing with the going through, you know, parole and stuff like that. Parole is not for us. Parole is not there to assist us. They're there to make sure we're accountable for our actions, make sure that we're responsible with what we do. You know, when I got out, my parole went there and said, well, you need a job. Well, I owned an organization, you know, a small business at the time. So that was my goal, you know, and it was like, well, I do work. And I didn't understand the concept of why he wanted me to actually get a job. Let me tell you something, why he wanted me to get a job. Just for people that go, well, I'm being harassed by my parole officer. They want me to go get employment and stuff like that. It's not about the money. It's not about that they just want to tell you what to do. The reason why it's so important to have a job is because you're interacting with people. You're interacting with everybody else but yourself. And I've noticed that, you know, I'm on, my fourth job in 6 months. So, and I'm noticing that it's very important to have that job and those working relationships and the sense of responsibility because, you know, there's days where I work my ass off and I think, like, what am I doing this for? And then I take a look at my son and my wife and my home, and I realize, like, this is why I work my ass off. This is why I do what I do. And it's not just about my freedom, but it's about other people's freedoms as well. It's about other people's lives. It's not just me. And so when I got a job and I started working my first job 8 hours a day, there was a sense of confidence that was built within me. You know, a confidence that I never had before that, you know, this is something I don't have to do. I could sit here and try to get free money. I could sit here and try to, you know, I could play video games all day, right? But thing is that it built relationships with people, and it made me feel like I actually belonged out here rather than like I was a visitor or, you know, and then that really helped with the no longer alienating myself. So I had to remember that, you know, the job thing was very important. And I didn't understand it when the parole officer, I thought he was just picking on me, like, you know, get off my back, dude. I just got out after 20 years. But the thing is, he wanted me to experience of being responsible, of waking up at a certain time every morning on time, you know, getting ready for work, going to work, keeping a job is very rough because you're dealing with different dynamic now. You're dealing with your ego, your pride. You're dealing with your habits and stuff like that. And you're incorporating yourself into society at a pace that is not for all. And so today I realize the importance of having a job and keeping a job and to keep myself responsible that I can be here and conduct myself. Let me tell you something. When I didn't have a job, it was rough. You know, it was like, why am I not just back in prison? I'm just wasting away out here. I'm doing nothing with my life. I'm waking up when I want. I'm doing what I want. And, yeah, that's cool for a minute, but then it loses its novelty very shortly, normally after 2 weeks. And so I went through my little process of I'd clean the house as best I could, and, you know, I'd panic of you know, I'm sitting there and – trying to think about like bills and how to pay for stuff. And when I got my car wreck, if not for my family, for my sister-in-law and my brother, you know, that $500 deductible and don't have a job was rough. And so I got blessed, and I'm very grateful for that. But, I mean, that's like a rock bottom where you're like, you know, I'm not doing it. I'm a failure out here. And I need to make some quick money now. And, you know, fortunately for me, I have good people in my life where I don't have to think about fast money. I don't think about anything illegal. I just have to calm down, relax, and to sit here and say, this too shall pass. It's going to be okay. Let's just focus on the end game. Let's focus on me just staying out and not getting back into criminality, you know, and trying to make a quick buck because, you know, as we say in the game of dominoes, all money ain't good money. And so there's a lot of things that trigger when we don't work out here. So when you're being harassed by your parole officer, hey, you need to go get a job. Go get a job. Really, like it's a life-changing event. When you get, you know, I get to drive my own car every morning and every day after work. It is my car. I fix that thing up like a 16-year-old with LED lights and a system and everything else. The freedoms that I have today are the incentives to stay out of prison, to sit there and actually keep doing what I'm doing. So as far as the organization's going, we're doing good. I want to help more people, but I figure, you know, I was at the point where with legacy programs that I wanted to just change the world overnight. I wanted to sit there and be available for everybody. And then when I did, it just kind of like I spread myself too thin, and you know, relationships failed and friendships fell off and stuff like that. And now that I realize that, you know, legacy programs, education reentry, we are here for those that need us. You know, I don't have to sit here and go out and find people. People will find us. And I've been, you know, one guy called us a hole in the program. That's a hole in the wall. You know, that's a huge compliment, you know, that, you know, to sit there and, you know, that we, that it is just what it is, you know, that I'm just, I don't know. So, but we are like a little hole in the wall. We're like that little Chinese restaurant or that little restaurant where, you know, we, yeah, you know, I don't know, but you know, hold on one second. I'm sorry, guys. But, and that's one of the things that, you know, what we pride ourselves on now is just being the mom and pop shop, you know, the ones that, you know, people will find us when they need us, and we're here for everybody and anybody. And that's what makes us so effective, is that we're not going to sit there and just go push ourselves on everybody and say, oh, well, we could help you. We're just going to, you know, we're just going to sit here and help out everyone we can and do what we can and be more effective. And now I'm focusing more on quality rather than quantity. You know, I don't need 20 different clients or anything like that. I deal with a handful and I keep them out of prison. We have 100% success rate, by the way. None of our guys have gone back to prison that's been involved in our program. So, yeah, it's just one of those things that, you know, I think, hold on one second. Let's see. I saw something on my phone right now. Absolutely. We are, oh, shoot. I see. Okay, so she's on too. I said, yeah. As my secretary says, we are effective. And I think that's one of the things I'd rather be effective than popular. That's it's a great thing to, you know, it's almost like an honor to be able to come from where I came from, do what I do now, and, you know, to help the formerly incarcerated and the family members. There's a lot of joy I get from that. And I was just going over something the other day of there's no such thing as a selfless act. You know, there's always something involved for yourself. There's always some personal gain. And, you know, for me to help other people really helps me out because it gives me purpose in life. It, you know, I was asked a question last week of what is what does living life mean? You know, what's happiness? And mine is just being purposeful and being not just being a drain on society or a drain on my family or my friends. I want to be the best I can be. And, you know, we talk about, I've talked about this before, is that, you know, when one of us goes back for a violation, you know, we let down a whole population of people. And I hold that true and near and dear, like that is absolutely true, that when one of us fail, there's somebody inside that's sitting there going, well, if he can't do it, I can't either. But when they sit there and say, well, if he can do it, so can I. And that's how we become effective. And that's how we become influential within our community. And when the community sits there and takes us in and it gives us resources and do what they can, it gives a positive message to the younger youth, to the others in the community that maybe aren't so much community-based. You know, it takes a selfishness out of that. And so, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, nothing that you do is unsaid. You know, somebody's going to recognize it. Somebody's going to see it. And, you know, there's so many brothers of mine that I've done time with today. And I could name off, you know, Tommy, Mike, Smokey, freaking Mackie, everybody, like all these guys I did time with. You know, only two went back. But the ones that didn't go back, they were involved in the programs in the prison. They wanted the rehabilitation. They wanted the education. They wanted the awareness. And those guys are thriving today. They're doing amazing. In fact, Mike has his own program, Legacy Alliance, you know, and he's teaching people how to communicate and showing the community how to stay safe and stuff like that. So it's just you know, it's just crazy how that's working out of, you know, and I sit there and I think about, like, what is the secret? What is the secret to my success today? And people say I'm successful and I don't agree, but I don't agree because I want to stay humble and I don't want to, like, oh, I got it together. Because let me tell you something, there's days that I don't, you know, I struggle just to get out of bed. And those are days where I pray more. But I will tell you this, that the secret to my success so far, I'll put it like that, is when I was in prison, I worked and went to groups and I educated myself best I could because I knew I was going to get out one day. Oh, I hoped. I didn't know. It was one of those things like, you know, you hope you get out, but if you don't, you're fine. And so, what I had to learn is that, you know, what my conduct was in there, was it feeding, you know, the prison stuff, or, you know, was it feeding the prison ego, the prison lifestyle? And so when I used to work from 7 a.m. to 8 o'clock at night between groups and work, people used to go, hey, you know, Breeze, you're gone all day, man. Like, how do you do it? Just kick back, watch TV or something. And I used to tell people that, well, if I can't do it in here, what makes you think I'm going to be able to do it out there? You know, and one of the things I realized is that as a father, husband, as a CEO, as a returned citizen, I don't get time off. You know, I get 2 days off. I get Saturdays and Sundays right now. Saturdays, I run my prayer service. On Sundays, I do the radio show. So I don't get that time off where I could just do absolutely nothing one day. I'm doing something every single day. And so, and I get worn out to where I shut my phone off now. And I don't have time like that at night. And I go to bed early and I make sure that I rise early. I get my day started. I work my ass off. And I do what I was supposed to do long ago. So that's where I learned that work ethic, is that, you know, let me tell you like this, I told all the kids in prison that everybody is ready to get out. You could sit there and say, hey, you're getting released today, and everyone's going, I'm ready. But the question is, are you ready to stay out? are you ready to stay out and doing to contribute to staying out? I built relationships. I built foundations. I built bridges. I networked from within to out. And that is where I got my idea, my platform for legacy, is that if we give these men and women a network before they get out, they're ahead of the game. You know, if they know they have a support network and they have a support system, they're not going back, because we're building them up and giving them that confidence that, hey, you can't afford to mess up. You got people counting on you. You got people behind you. And that's why I like the emotional intelligence of, you know, there's days that, you know, one of my coping strategies is just crying. You know, when things get too rough for me, I cry. And I sit there and I pray. And I ask for guidance. And I ask for, you know, what am I supposed to be doing? And that's what these guys and women need, is that they need to be able to voice that they're scared, that they're fearful, that they're ashamed, you know, they're doubtful. And it has to be addressed. And when we acknowledge this, we build them up to be their own people. And right now, yeah, we are their voice. You know, I don't like saying that all the time, like I am somebody's voice. Right now I am. But you know what? I'm also giving them back their voice. And that's my goal. I don't want to be somebody else's voice. I just want to build somebody up so they can say something and they can do something. And so that's just, you know, that's just how it should be. And we should be building people up, not tearing them down. We should be encouraging people, not sitting there tearing them down with, you know, they could do more. You know, we seek progress, not perfection. And so it's like, it's just one of those things that we have to be mindful of, you know, how are we leaving people, places, things better than we find them? How do we acknowledge that something's wrong, and how do we get the tools that we need to figure out, you know, like, hey, how can I help? And so I remember my first job, that the tip money, I felt so uncomfortable taking tip money for just doing my job. I would go to the store, and then I would, the person behind me, I'd pay for their groceries. I'm going to tell you something about the good deeds that we do, that, you know, everybody thinks that, hold on one second, I'm sorry. Let's see here. Okay, what was it? Hold on, I got a message. Yeah, absolutely. So stepping away from those walls is progress. And it is, you know, it's, you know, it's almost like, that's actually, I like that. Stepping away from those walls of progress. That's, you should actually put that on the website. I really do like that. You know, when I first got out, I used to see gun towers, or I used to look for them, and I felt very uncomfortable. Even today, I feel very uncomfortable walking out my house and being exposed to, you know, just being in the neighborhood or something like that. The being public is very troublesome sometimes. And I have anxiety attacks. I always think that I'm holding this sign saying I just got out of prison. But really, if you look at me, you can't tell. Nobody, I told my boss the other day, I said, you know, I'm behind. You know, there's a gap in my life that's missing. And I said, you know, after 20 years in prison, it does that, you know. And I had... And this is like the, you know, when somebody says I did 20 years, I did 30 years, think of it like this. When I went to prison, the smallest phone we had was the size of a brick. We had PlayStation 1. We didn't even have Facebook. We had no, the only social media was, you guys remember MySpace? And everybody had that same friend, Phil. So, and I went in before MySpace. I had a MySpace when I first went into prison. That was made for me. So, you know, but when you put it into terms of that, you know, so we had Circuit City, we had Toys R Us, we had Kmart at that time. And when you think about it like that, that's how much life has changed for us. Oh, and pagers. The biggest thing for us was pagers with voicemail. I had a Master P thing on my voicemail, you know, as a kid. So when we think of our life like that, of how much we've missed out on, and you look at all the PlayStation 2, 3, 4, 5, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and all that other stuff, you're like, wow, that's I really did miss out on a lot of life. Prom, I didn't get to do any of that. So, which, let's just be honest, the prom would have been a disaster for me because I was a real turd back then. So, but yeah, you know, it's like Christian says, is that, you know, stepping away from those walls is progress. And a lot of times that though we step away from those walls, we leave a part of us that's in there still, and we take a part of that with us. Almost like a switch, like that Olsen twin or that twin movie back in the days. And, you know, today I am actually haunted by prison. You know, there's a part of me that's always a convict. In fact, I just got dog tags ordered. And one of them has, you know, my prison nickname was Breeze. And with my CDC number on there. And then on the second one, it just says my name, Frank. And it says, you know, all my titles, you know, so the first one has Breeze with my CDC number, because I feel like that was a war zone. I feel that, and that's no disrespect to the veterans, but it's symbolic. You know, Suge Knight had these handcuffs, that broken handcuff bracelets. And though that's really cool, I wanted to come up with something of my own. That, you know, so I got the dog tags, and one of them is my prison persona, is the person that I dealt with for 20 years. And then the other one is who I am today. And so those are constant reminders of, you know, and then I think I even put on there like how it begins, never how it ends. And the other one is like my titles of, you know, returning citizen, good person, you know, somebody that's trying. And so I have to be reminding myself, I don't ever take my past and just put it away and say, hey, it has no good. It has a lot of good in it. I just had tools that I used that weren't for the right reasons, you know. So that's one of the things that I splurged on, and I mean, they're like $10, but it's symbolic. And so that's one of the things I did just recently, and thought that was pretty cool. But you know, just for the ones that are coming home, you know, don't get frustrated so much that you blow yourself up. You know, put down that damn shovel. Quit digging. It's okay. You know, it's going to pass. But the more we dig, the bigger the hole we got to crawl out of. And that's not easy. You know, I think with formerly incarcerated, we freeze. I know I freeze. You know, I don't know how to process things like normal people or whatever normal is. So I have to sit there and process things a little slower, because I'm battling who I used to be and how I used to handle things. And now I have to process this and go, how do I handle this today? You know, the three people I struggle with is within is the person I was, the person I am, and the person who I want to be. And that's look, let me tell you something. The person I was is screwed up. You know, there's a lot of warped beliefs that allowed me to survive a very difficult childhood. And the person I am, you know, I'm transitioning, but there's a lot of times that, you know, there's triggers for me. There's those, you know, we have these triggers that we have external and internal triggers. And the external triggers are usually people, places, things. The internal are usually the beliefs, the emotions, and the thoughts. And so going into, you know, whenever I come across a situation, I have to go, okay, well, how am I going to deal with this? Am I going to deal with this as, you know, Lawrence? Am I going to deal with this as Mr., you know, Reverend Lawrence? Or am I going to deal with this as Breeze? And so sometimes they get meshed up. It's like at work, you know, where you sit there and you got three bins of four-quarter and two-quarter, and then you sit there and you put them all on one chain, and they end up meshing or smashing each other because you're not paying attention to chain three, and everything's on chain two and one. So, you know, and there's two loads of wood on each chain. So that's, I don't expect anybody to get that, but it's just something I came up with. But, you know, it's sorry. So, but yeah, you know, there's things that I struggle with, you know, the three people that I'm transitioning from, you know, from and to. You know, who do I want to be? When I'm faced with a decision, you know, what is this going to contribute to? Is this going to contribute to who I want to be, or is this going to contribute to who I was? It's kind of like you guys remember the story of the two wolves? The one you feed the most is the one that's going to get the fattest and is going to sit there and outgrow the other one. It's kind of like that. You know, I don't ever forget who I am or where I came from or how I got here. I'm very mindful of that. I think that when we do that, you know, we're able to navigate a little bit better. That awareness is key. You know, that's why legacy programs, education, and reentry. Education, we have to reprogram ourselves. We have to learn about who we were. We have to learn about who we are and who we want to be. And it has to be a goal. We have to have goals, because if you don't have a goal, you're kind of misguided. You know, there's people I know that they have like a shoot. So I remember last year I was talking to my sister-in-law about what she wanted to do. And she's like, this is what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to be a parole officer. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And at the time she was working like three jobs. She was going to school, like all this stuff, but she set a goal in front and she ended up getting to where she wanted to go. And today she is that one step closer. Without that goal 1 year ago, I would wonder where she'd be right now. You know, when I sat there last year and I was working these dead end jobs as a baker, as construction, as a baker again, and going through all these changes, I sat there and put a goal that I wanted a career job. I wanted something with retirement. I wanted something with benefits. I wanted something with decent money. And I set my eyes for it. I set my heart for it. I said, I'm going to get there. It's going to happen. And today I'm proud to sit there and say that, hey, I am a union man. You know how many people want a union job growing up, like especially middle-aged? Like I'm going to be 40 in February. That's like, I actually am a union man now. So it's just to say that, you know, when we set those goals and we sit there and say, this is what I'm going to do. You know, when I got out and I didn't like how the system treated me, I didn't like how there was no resources for me whatsoever. It was pretty much the parole officer telling me, go live under a bridge. There was no vouchers. There was no, you know, all this stuff that people, and that's another tall tale. And they sit there and say, oh, when you get out, you have all these benefits. Bullshit. You got shit coming. You have nothing, absolutely nothing coming. You, the $200 that they give you out the gate is what you go with. You know, and when I got released after 20 years before I went in, I had no property before I went in. I had no home before I went in. It was everything that was created afterwards. So, you know, you have to set that goal. You have to do for yourself. So I sat there and I was like, well, I'm starting a program. And legacy programs, if anyone ever wonders like why legacy, well, there's two reasons. One, legacy is the foot that we step forward with. We have to pay attention to the step that we leave behind. What do I want my name to mean when I'm gone? What do I want my legacy to mean? I want to be a good man. I want to sit here and have a good ride with people where they're like, I'm actually going to be missed. And they're not going to sit there and go, that bastard. Thank God he's gone. I don't want to be known as a crime. I don't want to be known as a convict. I don't want to be known as a criminal. I don't want to be known as a fuck up. That's why legacy means so much to me. But Legacy actually stands for education gives heir to community and youth. And the heir means accountability, integrity, and responsibility. It is very important to understand what we give back to our community, whether we know it or not. And so I emphasize on legacy that it means more to me. You know, my name means absolutely nothing unless I'm doing something with it. And I don't want to sit here and be a drain on society anymore. You know, last time I was out, I was 16 years old. No, I was 18, but like really out, I was 16. And I want to be able to be a contributor now. I want to be able to help people. You know, when we're having this, somebody needed clothes and stuff for the reentry, I wasn't able to do anything at that time. Well, today I'm able to do that. And, and that's what my life means is being of service. You know, I'm now a public servant. And so, you know, fortunately we had wonderful people that work with us and for us and that helped the person out. But, you know, I really wanted to be that person to do that. And I wasn't able to because, you know, I was establishing myself. So sometimes when we get too far ahead of ourselves, we're not as effective. And that word effectiveness, you know, that Christine said that it's very important today that, you know, if all you have is your time, that's fine. All you have is your money, that's fine. But as long as you can offer something. And I know I've been absent in my lives and with my organization, but I have a wonderful staff that people that work with us and that are part of Legacy that are carrying on and doing what they're supposed to with it. And I have complete faith and trust in them that what they do. And a huge shout out to, you know, my secretary, Christine Brady, and, you know, some of the other people behind the scenes that are doing things. But, you know, I'm just super grateful for the people that I have in my life. And, you know, I know I'm distant right now, and I know I don't talk on my phone as much with people, but I'm still here. And I'm just trying to establish something. And I just appreciate the patience and the grace that people give me and the love that people still have for me, even though my name's not everywhere on Facebook and, you know, people still check up on me, and I really do appreciate that. So if anybody's interested, you could check out Legacy Programs on Facebook. It's a group. If you go to legacyprograms.net, you can see on there that it has all my stuff on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on YouTube. You can find me on Facebook under Sparky Lee and from Georgia. And so if you're interested in trying to just learn resources and stuff like that and have a communication with a group of people that know what you're going through and that have experienced it. And I think that our mentor program is our bread and butter of the program, is the heart of it, because we have people that have been there that they could tell you exactly what's going to happen. Because funny thing about human behavior, nothing changes. It's just different styles. So check us out on Legacy Programs on Facebook, Our Legacy, Each One, Teach One, Reentry Services. We're all over the place, but definitely go check out legacyprograms.net. That's programs.net. And check us out. Get involved in the Cards for the Incarcerated, please. You know, send your love. You don't have to leave an address on there. The card will get to them without one. And, you know, I just want to sit there and say thank you for all the support that I get. Thanks for all the listeners that are taking the time to listen to this. I love you. And I wouldn't be here without the people behind me and next to me and in front of me. Just super grateful of how the person I'm becoming today. I can't be enough. I can't give enough gratitude for that. And that I wouldn't be here today without the people that are in my life. And so, and you know, everyone knows who they are. I've had people stand in front, take bullets for me. I've had people on the side of me, hold my hand. I've had people right behind me to push me forward, to do better and to do more. And so it, but all necessary. And so that's it for today, guys. I'm going to end this a little early. I love y'all. Stay blessed. Thank you for everything. 626, would you like to comment or do you have a question?
No, it's me.
All right. Well, thank you for everything you do for the legacy programs. We do appreciate it. I appreciate that.
So. Not a problem. Progress, not perfection.
Your progress, not perfection. Oh, you can't steal my stuff. So you got anything to
please.
Say? You got anything to add?
No, just go to the website. You can always ask questions. And, you know, we always have somebody to answer. I'm always on it. You know, always here to lend an ear or to shoot a message, you know. Stuff like that.
We appreciate it. All right, Blog Talk Nation. I will see you guys the same time next week, and I will make sure I line up a guest. If anyone's interested in speaking, sharing your story, it doesn't have to – just if you just want your voice to be heard, if you want that acknowledgement that I am being heard, you know, be fearless, be bold, and go forward with it. You know, hit us up, 657-383-1630. Again, 657-383-1630. Give us a call. Call in. Let us know your life. I want to know about you. Everyone knows about Sparky Lee, about Lawrence. I want to know about you. Let me hear what you got going on in your life, and let's start a conversation. So if anyone's wanting to be a guest, like I said, you can hit up. You can even call my cell phone number for the business, which is 805-621-1176. Again, 805-621-1176. Line up, be a guest, be part of the conversation, be part of the solution, and let's knock down these problems, people. All right, and once again, for the people behind the walls, for the family members that are doing the time with them, our hearts go out to you. We love you. You are not alone by no reason. And, you know, all you got to do is make a phone call, text a text, or sit there and send an email. It's very simple today, guys. So, and from that, you know, we what else? I'm trying to think. And check out the cards for the incarceration for the incarcerated on legacyprograms.net. That's with programs with an S. And check it out. You know, show us your love. Show us you know, if you have an idea that we can run with. Let's roll. All right, y'all. Have a wonderful day. Stay blessed. And just remember, how it begins is never how it ends. And leave people, places, things better than you find them. All right, y'all. Bye.